irony. My self-concept is awaiting your invasion. Clumsy penetration, punishment. Oh yeah. When the hope of another wet nightmare is all we have to live.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining me in the studio is Nancy Cohen, the author of Delirium, How the Sexual Counter-Revolution is Polarizing America, historian and author of two books, including The Reconstruction of American Liberalism, 1965 to 1914. Her writing has appeared in the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, Business History Review, and the Huffington Post. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nancy Cohen.
Hi, Ian. Happy to be here with you.
And it certainly appears that the politics of the body have taken over our body politic. Not a day passes without some new Republican initiative to make life more difficult for women, particularly those who want to get an abortion, to humiliate them, to tie them up in the knots, to cause them unnecessary expense. Just the other day in Tennessee, they have a bill that's passing through the legislature that would actually publish the abortion providers' home addresses, et cetera, so that the Operation Rescue people can harass them. And now one of the other legislatures, I'm not sure which one is now claiming that women fake rape in order to get an abortion. Women are very tricky, aren't they?
Yes. Well, the first line of my book opens, perhaps if the pill had not been invented, American politics would be very different today. And I think that's being proved every day now. So Delirium tells a story about how a small group of reactionaries who, frankly, are obsessed with other people's sex lives have hijacked American politics. And what we're seeing today in these Republican legislatures, in the Republican race with Rick Santorum, of all people, being a front runner for the president of the United States, is the kind of logical result of 40 years of sexual counter-revolution.
And how does it tie in? Because it's clearly a resurgence at the moment. I mean, it's peaking. And I think a lot of women probably thought, oh, you know, they have arguments over birth control. That was, you know, decades ago. But they're now back with a vengeance. And how much is it tied into the kind of coordination that we see with the campaign finance overturning, the super PACs, ALEC, which is this organization that the Koch brothers and others have funded that has organized Republican legislatures with these prepackaged bills, you know, voter suppression bills and others, which coincidentally are being through all the legislatures. So there's a real pattern there. Give me a sense of what's the organizing principle here, if there is one.
Very good question. So the organizing principle is that back in the late 70s, early 80s, the right-wing establishment, the new right, the money people, the 1%, made a kind of devil's bargain with the rising religious right, thought that they could control them, essentially. And, you know, in Reagan's, you know, three-legged stool, the neoconservatives, the economic conservatives, and the social conservatives all got together to forward this right-wing agenda. The story I tell is about how in the 90s, really, the establishment and the one percenters lost control to the sexual fundamentalists. And the fact is, there's never been any kind of electoral majority for ending Social Security or ending Medicare or repealing the Clean Air Act. The ground troops of the right wing of the Republican Party are these people who first became politically active to turn back the sexual revolution, feminism, and gay rights. They then formed the religious right, and they took over the Republican Party from the bottom to the top. So certainly you have the super PACs keeping a weak candidate such as Santorum in the race so long enough that he could actually appeal to the people who make up the majority of Republican voters. And on their side, on the religious right side, they ally with these the money power because they want to deprive Democrats of the money and power to impose gay rights, to impose women's rights, to impose sex education, to impose science education on the public. So they're committed to starving government because they think that, you know, the secular humanists godless Democrats have taken it over.
So would there be an analogy here then with what happened with the German industrialists and the early Nazis? In other words, the German industrialists thought, well, Hitler is obviously a bit of an extremist, but he is beating up on the unions and he's totally pro-business and we can work with him. And then, of course, they found out that they couldn't. Is this a bit of a case of where the Republicans cynically thought, well, here we will have our version of the Democratic union organizers, the precinct walkers, the stamp lickers. These are the people that will become our new, grassroots workers, but we'll be able to control them.
Yes, history is full of unintended consequences. So I would say the analogy of people in power looking for a mass of voters that they control is apt. But I don't want to take that as far to suggest that.
Let's not talk about fascism and make loose analogies here. I didn't mean it for that to be that way. But so we have my sense, though, again, let me introduce again Nancy Cohen, the author of Delirium, How the Sexual Counterrevolution is Polarizing America. She's an historian and author of two books, including The Reconstruction of American Liberalism, 1965 to 1914. Now, I had a forum the other night at the UCLA Hammer Forum with Lawrence Lessig, who's leading proponent of campaign finance reform. We talked about the super PACs, which you just mentioned. He made the point that he thinks that the real issues in this country have nothing to do with left and right. In other words, we have been caught in a left and right polemic and counter-polemic, and that we're essentially being manipulated and distracted by that, that the real divide in America is between the insiders and the outsiders, and that is the 99% versus the 1% on the inside. Is it possible that sexual politics is an extension of a kind of manipulation? Because the Saudi kings, the Saudi royals use sex as a way to completely subjugate their own people. There are so many laws there that you're spending every minute of the day wondering whether you're showing one inch of skin, and you can't get round a revolution. So do you follow my logic?
I do. And I would absolutely disagree and say it's the reverse, that these people, I figure they're about 15 to 20% of the national electorate, no more, a tiny minority who've really commandeered the political discourse. It's at the grassroots level that they're pushing these, very extreme measures against abortion, actually define birth control as abortion, feel that sex is destroying America, that women having sexual freedom and having economic freedom has destroyed the traditional family, which has destroyed America. So I see a lot more of this actually coming out of what is an authentic, right-wing sexual fundamentalism, pushing some of these, the one percenters, the elite, actually in a direction that I don't think they want to go, because they know that they actually can't win any elections if they talk about this publicly.
But how come they're so successful, disproportionate to their numbers? The fact that you've got all these state legislatures, and you must admit in 2010 they made tremendous inroads, and that a lot of that was organized by Dick Armey and Karl Rove, neither of whom I think are on the religious right. They're more cynical, they're more political pros. So explain to me the disproportionate political influence that they have.
Yes, it comes from their brilliance at electoral politics. Starting in the early years of the sexual counter-revolution in the late 70s, these ordinary activists infiltrated the Republican Party at the local and precinct level. They rewrote state Republican platforms, including adding things like gays should be quarantined. A lot of the leaders of the Republican Party now, people like Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, Scott Walker, actually came up through the ranks of this movement, starting out in local politics. And so what happens is, in low turnout elections, they control the Republican Party, and they always turn out, and they always stay active. And so in an election like 2010, which was low turnout, they can really shift state legislatures. they have a particularly strong impact in kind of low knowledge elections, so local elections, state elections. They tend to do far less well in Senate elections or presidential elections. And so they won these elections in 2010 by staying politically active. And what I show in my book is that the so-called Tea Party is really nothing more than a rebranding of the Christian right. And yes, Dick Armey and Karl Rove funded them, but Ralph Reed was also very involved. All these far-right Christian right organizations were active in these, you know, Republican Tea Party primaries in 2010.
So there's no surprise then that Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin are the couple of the stars of the Tea Party.
Exactly.
Again, I speak with Nancy Cohen, the author of Delirium, How the Sexual Revolution is Polarizing America. So how did this what's wrong then with the secular humanists, for God's sake? What's wrong with you women? I mean, how could you let this happen if they're the minority?
It's a good question. So I don't think I would blame women. In part, the Democratic Party has been complicit in this because the Democratic Party has had its own sexual counter-revolution within. Not so much that there have been reactionaries on these questions in the Democratic Party. That kind of ended by 1980 or so. But every time Democrats lose elections, they default to this collective panic where they blame their base. They blame women, they blame feminists, they blame gays, they blame elitists for alienating mainstream America and driving it away. And so whenever Democrats get scared, as they did the year before 2010, for example, when their numbers, you know, when their approval ratings were clearly dropping, is they tried to appeal to this kind of imaginary white male conservative, and they stopped talking about the things that matter to their own voters, and their own voters got demoralized and stayed home. So 40 million people who voted in 2008 didn't vote in 2010. And they were disproportionately the young, minorities, unmarried women, and Democrats.
So you're saying that by Obama's using the same strategy now on gay marriage. You know, the gay lobby is saying, we want you to embrace it. And he's saying, no, I'm evolving. And he doesn't want to step out ahead because he's afraid he's going to lose some centrist votes. You're saying that's a mirage.
I'm saying it's a mirage because all the studies by political scientists show that Americans have become much more socially progressive over the last 30 years, and that Democrats have actually won elections because people have become more socially progressive, and where they're losing these voters that they think are conservative on cultural issues, you know, the, you know, proverbial Reagan Democrat white man, those men actually aren't voting for Democrats because they've soured on Democratic liberal economics, not on the cultural programs. Mm. You know, there's evidence that gay marriage had absolutely no effect on Bush's reelection in 2004. So I do think what Obama's doing now with gay marriage is a prime example of Democratic panic. And I am pretty convinced that if he stood on principle, he would win voters for simply standing on principle for what most people think he believes anyway. And he would also pick up votes.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of gods, guns, and gays, you're saying that they don't, I mean, the right is obsessed with gays, but what about guns? You're saying that it's really the Reagan Democrats, you know, the fact that, you know, we've got Joe the Plumber running in Ohio now against Nancy Kaptur. That should be interesting. you're saying that there's no question that the Democratic Party, it's an absolute indictment of them that they can't hold working people in within their ranks. I mean, there's no question about
that. But the studies also show that that's a myth, that to the extent that Democrats have lost working class voters, it's been almost entirely in the South. And that in the North, yes, white working class identifies less Democratic than they did 40 years ago, but at a lower rate than middle class and upper income people identify Democratic. Class voting has actually gotten stronger over the last 30 years. I mean, this is what's frustrating. You know, academics show that this is the case, but the exit polls and the pundits keep repeating the myths.
Well, we're going to have to revisit to you and your book, Nancy, because we're really scratching the surface here, and we've run out of time. Again, I've been speaking with Nancy Cohen, the author of Delirium, How the Sexual Counter-Revolution is Polarizing America. She's an historian and author of two books, including The Reconstruction of American Liberalism, 1865 to 1914, and her writing has appeared in the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, Business History Review, and the Huffington Post. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Man.